Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, Bobby.
Hey. I can't hear the music, so I don't know what to say. So I don't know when to say hello to everyone.
Okay, well, you're good to go now.
Oh, all right. Okay, well, I apologize for the wrong music. I had something a lot more seasonal planned for this evening, but we seem to be running afoul of the program Gremlins tonight. So this is Captain B2, and welcome everyone this evening to the Christmas Eve version of Exploring a Crisis. And my number one elf is on his way. Apparently, his sleigh broke down, so Dan will be here directly. From what it sounds like, though, I have the very handsome and distinguished Gray Eyes helping me. Is that correct?
You do. Yes, you do.
Oh, yay! Yay! I always like to have a handsome man helping me out. So, well, great! How's your holiday season been so far?
It's been good, thank you. I appreciate that.
All right.
Well, we'll
go plunging right in to this evening's program. We have some carryovers from last program, which is, and by the way, you'll see on the board, you'll see the music that was intended for this evening, which is Pentatonix, Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy. So go ahead and listen to it anyway, because I think you'll find it entertaining. And if you've never listened to Pentatonix, I encourage you to, if you like music, especially if you like something new and refreshing, because Pentatonix is a group of five people who sing a cappella. And one fellow, one of the members does beatbox, and they do some amazing stuff. Dan introduced me to them. I'm very glad that he did. So please go ahead and give that a listen, and let's start up. What we have from the last contest, we have the Whimsical Gauche of Bill Mayer. We have some carryovers, and the first one. Let me grab that. And put that up on the, let's see. Oh, come on. Don't do that to me. Yes, there we go. My computer is confused this evening also, which is really helpful. Okay, here we go. And here we have the first piece, which is Princess Lucrece Knows How to Dance by Pink Fairy 5. And since that's a woman's voice, I'll go ahead and give that a read, and have let's see, that was from prompt number 12. And Princess Lacrise knows how to dress and to eat. Her exquisite lace linen collar, tiered in lace layers of dainty threes, was not the only beautifying feature of Princess Lacrise. Her beetle necklace of green peridot was engraved well. Her monocle was designed by Bob Mackie's protege, Snell. She was the ultimate spring peeper croaker. We saw by her wardrobe she was a leapfrogging bloker. Prominently featured on her front was a darling topaz roach brooch. It was the kind of semi-jewel that would never have to ride coach. Princess Lacrise knew to top off her flashy outfit with a favored crown, orange crushed velvet, puffball at the top. It was a coppery light brown. She is dazzling, a jumper among the reeds, the best of the best. Ribbit, ribbit, she shouts, her head a big crest. Don't you get hungry wearing all of those bugs? Asked Lady-in-Waiting. Not really, the princess answered as her maids began on the uncrating. Grasshoppers, ants, beetles, and ladybugs were scattered all about, and she jabbed and ate them with her wand without making a sound. End poem.
Well,
Pink Fairy had fun with this one.
Beautiful.
Thank you. What did you think of Pink Fairy's piece?
I thought it was beautiful. I mean, she captured the prompt quite fascinatingly, you know, descriptive and fully engaging throughout. You know, the details are impeccable, and I just really like Princess Lacrise.
I enjoy, there was actually, there were two frog figures, and I thought this one was a prince. But the fact that she turned it on his head and made it a princess, I thought was even more imaginative. Because she didn't let the titling stand in her way. She wrote what she saw, and she saw a princess here, which I thought was wonderfully imaginative and creative. And I love the way she picked out little details of the illustration, the insects and the crown and the collar, the lace collar, and just built her whole story on that. So wonderful job, Pink Fairy 5. Beautifully done. So let's see. Let me go to the. Yes, we've got the next one. Grab that, and okay, and post it. And we have a little bit of a time lag here. We have "Who Needs It" by Truth Chills. Would you like to read that for us?
Yeah, sure.
Thank you.
No problem. Who Needs It by Truth Chills. I think time and luck are in cahoots against me. If it wasn't for them two, I would always be early with pockets full of money. I can't blame society for not getting enough love from mommy. No, because I feel the disdain that father, time, has for me. How can I know this? Because we are all exposed to the knowing of how and when things get done. But the enemy of time creeps around to find who would rather sleep in. And who leans towards a lack of discipline. Why he works that way, who's to say? But procrastination is his name, and wasting time is his game. We may think that we have all the time in the world. Reality is there are certain things set in timeline that's just for me. And if I'm a no-show, it will still get done. But now my reward goes to that chump. Every day, wasted leads to an unfulfilled life, because in the end, when we should be surrounded by our great-grandchildren and enjoying the fruits of our labor, we find ourselves in line for bread, wondering where we will lay our heads. When we are old, we should be resting. We have to be pushing for each day to yield us a blessing, and Lady Luck and Father Time may have mercy once in a while, but for the most part, we find ourselves hungry and tired. Moral of this story, don't put off for tomorrow what you can do today, because your road may be long and full of tomorrows. Don't end it in regrets filled with sorrow. and poem.
Excellent read. Excellent. And I'm going to the contest right now. The chosen prompt 8 and prompt 51. So I'm scrolling down to those right now. And prompt 8 is, it's the figure of a woman, her back turned. She's got a dragonfly wings on her, and she's got snakes all over her lower skirt, and the title of it is Bad Luck. And certainly captured that in the verse. And interestingly enough, she's combined it with a rather upbeat one. The last prompt was a time for reflection, which is a gentleman standing in what looks like London, and all these surrounded by clock tower clock faces in this like golden haze, and he's got an umbrella or bumper chute, depending on where you're from, and a top hat on, and it's actually a rather nostalgic, it's not a depressing looking picture, but she's taken the upbeat and the downbeat and really combined them quite well in a rather depressing story for Christmas Eve. But she does have some very salient truths in there that we shouldn't put things off. And you know, you never realize that tomorrow is not promised to us. And if you've ever experienced in your family a sudden death, someone who's fine one day and gone the next, that just drives the point home. And you never realize fragile things are and how, you know, you think, I'll do that tomorrow, and you may not have it tomorrow. So she makes a very, very good point of that. And she says, we have to be pushing for each day to yield us a blessing, and Lady Luck and Father Time to have mercy on us once in a while. Well said. What did you think of it? You read it?
I enjoyed the poem. You know, I think there's a lot of truth in this as well, with the done what you can do today because tomorrow is not promised to you aspect of the poem. And, you know, I thought it was a fascinating write on the subject of time in our lives and its role and what will happen if we don't take advantage of the day and hope for tomorrow. So, and then it says, when we get old and should be resting, we have to be pushing each day to yield us a blessing. And Lady Luck and Father Time may have mercy once in a while, but for the most part, we find ourselves hungry and tired. Yeah. Fascinating point.
She's got a very, very good point there. There's a lot of sage wisdom in that, more abundant. The only criticism I would have, if I had any criticisms at all, is her format makes it difficult to read because it feels like she's got a rhyming rhythm in there, but the way she's got it structured makes it difficult to read as a poem. But she may have meant it as a short story, so who knows? I'm looking at it from the point of view of designing web pages, and if you don't put information in biteable chunks, people tend to go and then go right past it. So anyway, but that's minor, and that's style, and she's the author, and she can do as she damn well pleases, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, let's go get another one, and we have Take a Lesson from the Penguin. Oh, good. Someone wrote to the. I loved that. There's a couple in there that are so, so adorable, and the cheese ball is one of the ones that I loved. The mouse, and the other one is the penguin, is so adorable. And that's the one that was the prompt for this, and that's by. And I think Dan is trying to get on, and he says he can't find the show link, so. let me write a quick note to him and to see if
I am actually here.
Ah! Now we have to stop talking about you.
Oh, that's okay. Hey, this is on recording. Remember, I can go back and listen. I can't hide.
Oh, damn. Well, you're just in time because I just put up Take a Lesson from the Penguin by S. Sharp. And I know you like Scott's work.
Oh.
So would you like to read it?
Excellent, yes.
Scott?
I'm sorry, everybody, for being late. I had some craziness today.
Oh, that's
all
right. No dessert for you.
Let's. We'll see. I'll find a way. But everything's good, and I'm here. And Bobby, I'm sure, was taking care of everything while I was missing. So yeah, and I'll be.
Oh, I had my hat, my straw hat, and my cane on, and I was singing and dancing as well as anybody.
Oh, there you go. Excellent. But yes, I am here. 16 minutes late. That's not bad. That's acceptable
right.
In some lessons. All right, but I am here, and I got Scott's up, and I would love to read it. Absolutely.
Okay, let's do it.
So. This is called Take a Lesson from the Penguin. Yes, so this is from Prompt One. We're still on last week's, right? Last show. Excellent. Take a Lesson from the Penguin by Scott Sharp. Penguins are a funny lot. They seem happy for little reason. They watch other birds fly all around them. Yet they just waddle onward, seemingly without care, with their 2 feet firmly on the ground, their head on their shoulders, not in the clouds. Maybe humans could learn a thing or two. End poem. And interesting, you know, I do like Scott's work a lot. I have his book. I think it's called For the Love. I forget. I have it here. I should go get it. I believe it's called For the Love of Poetry. It's a great book. And he has a lot of, you know, kind of brevities or small one-page stories. One-page poems, which he does a great job with. And I do like this a lot. I think this is whimsical and fun, but also has a really good, interesting theme to it and interesting message like Scott always does. He has a good way of combining a lot of different things. And it is true, you know. I watch all the time so many other animals, I remember a long time ago, and it's the first, sometimes people say dumb things, but it really sticks with you. So I remember once, like, I was at work, this is 20 years ago, I was at work with somebody, and the guy looked out the window and he goes, look at that stupid squirrel. Just all he cares about is walking around gathering nuts and chasing girl squirrels. That's all he cares about. And he's like, man, I wish I was a squirrel right now. You know what I mean? And like, he's thinking, like, how easy a life they have, right? And I think about that with, like, lions. You watch lions sitting in the Serengeti, and the antelope are all around them. They don't care. They're just sitting there content. They're not hunting for fun or sport. They're not killing things. They only do it for one reason. When they're fed, they're happy. They just sit there. You know, and that's what he's saying with the penguins, I think, maybe, is, you know, they don't care. They can't fly. You know, they just they do what they do, and that's it. You know, and they're just happy and content. So, yeah, always fun from Scott. And a great little fun poem. But anyway, Bobby.
I agree. I thought that was a delicious little brevity. He took a very whimsical picture and gave it some wisdom. A little penguin with a very vintage bathing costume on, and his straw hat. They're looking very, very natty, very dapper, and very content with life. And maybe humans could learn a thing or two. Yes, I agree. It just it's like I've said many, many times. My favorite. My favorite life aphorism is an Italian proverb, which is, you being Italian should be able to understand it. Dolce fa niente.
Hmm.
No, huh?
Which means, no. I could barely understand English, and I am Italian.
Dolce fa niente means how sweet to do nothing.
Ah. My favorite Italian saying is mangia mangia, which means eat. That's what my favorite Italian saying.
Mangia mangia. So great.
Mangia
mangia.
What's that? Oh, what? Gray's on. Hey, Gray, I didn't know you were on.
Yeah, Gray's on there. He's been
hey,
honchoing.
Oh, so you didn't even need me tonight. You got your co-host right there with Gray.
Not true. Always need you. I always need my co-pilot.
All right.
Right.
Exactly. Greg's the bombardier. He's the navigator.
There you go. Sorry, Greg. Go ahead. Interrupted.
That's okay. You did a wonderful read on his poem, but I like his poem, you know, Take a Lesson from the Penguin, because, you know, they've got their feet firmly planted on the ground and their head on their shoulders, not in the clouds. You know, that's a fascinating statement there. And, you know, I definitely think it's apropos. So it's beautifully written and well read, Daniel.
Excellent, excellent. So is that all we have, just the three of us?
Yes.
So far, but we have
all right, cool.
we have a semi-solid commitment from Edinburgh to have an import come in later on this evening. So,
Cool.
Yes, Weaver of Dreams, Katie. Okay, so we have the next one is another penguin poem, Penguin at the Beach by Dammit Dave. And since this is a masculine voice, I'm going to ask Gray to read this, please.
Sure. This is called Penguin at the Beach by Dammit Dave. I'm sitting here upon the beach, and what could catch my eye? A penguin dressed in swimming gear. And man, that bird can fly. You should be in Antarctica, I yell across the sand. He pays no mind. I guess the trip is something he had planned. I like your hat, I holler out. He smiles and waddles near, then sits upon my towel as I offer him a beer. Then I take my cell phone out to take some pics with him. Before too long, we're both drunk and head out for a swim. When nightfall comes, he says goodbye by letting out a screech. By daylight's end, I've made a friend, a penguin at the beach. End poem.
Excellent read. Thank you. And Dan, what did you think of Dammit Dave's? I read Dammit Dave's Nom de Plume, and I can't help but think of something that my father, one of my jokes about my dad is I used to tell people that until I was about 12 years old, I thought my father's name was God Damn You, Harry.
Yep.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's okay. No, that's that old joke. Yeah, I get it. I like that. I thought this was great. I thought this was a lot of fun. You know, this certainly brought out the whimsy, right, which is the kind of the theme of these last two shows we've had.
Yeah.
I thought it was great. You know, our I've said it many times, and I see it again here with Dave, where our poets, my friends on the show right now included, really, really have great imaginations. And not only are they, you know, poetry and writing, you know, descriptive poetry, but so good with characters, so good with just, you know, fun descriptions. You know, so many people on our show I would love to see write stories, whether it's kids' stories or fantasy or anything, because I just think the imagination is amazing. And I thought this was a lot of fun. You know, he just had a great little, you know, great time just kind of coming up with his little characters and having to have little conversations. And it was a lot of fun. It was great. Nice job, Dave, as always. And what about you, Bobby?
I think it was excellent storytelling. He gave the image of personality. He anthropomorphized and personalized him a little bit, which is fun. He didn't give him a voice, which I like. He kept him mute, expressing his. His likes and dislikes. He smiles and waddles near. Then he sits upon my towel as I offer him a beer. Before too long, we are both drunk and headed for a swim.
Not a great safety left in here. We are both drunk and heading out for a swim. So I wouldn't necessarily follow the advice of this, but you know.
I trust the penguin's judgment. More than Dave.
Okay.
So Anyway, but I really enjoyed what he did with this prompt. I liked his imagination. I liked the whimsy. I liked the storytelling. I think it's overall an excellent piece. What'd you think, Gray?
Yeah, it was a pleasure to read that poem. You know, I liked it, the penguin at the beach, the whole idea of seeing this penguin at the beach and getting drunk with this penguin and making a friend out of that penguin. So I asked him, are you sure you weren't drunk before you saw the penguin at the beach?
Yep.
That's
no,
a good
this
one.
Is
okay.
Fun. Penguins are just fun anyway, aren't they? They're just you have to smile when you see a penguin.
You do because they're just some animals are caricatures. Nature must have been having a good day. You know, it's like the platypus is an animal, and the camel are animals that were made by committee.
You know? Yeah. Yep.
And penguins are just, you know, I think that, you know, it's God's tongue in cheek, or Mother Nature's tongue in cheek, and you know, just some animals, you know, that Mother Nature was having a good time, like ostriches. You know, they look ridiculous, but they're vicious.
Yeah, platypus, I think, were just the leftover parts from other animals. They just stuck together.
No, that's
just
me.
Platypus. Oh, it's you. Oh, it's you. Okay. All right.
Yeah, I was made. I was. I figured it out years ago. I was constructed on a Friday afternoon, right before closing time and right before happy hour. Someone said, "Well, just throw it together." You know, it ended up being me.
Right. They show you just leftover parts that were.
There you go. You know, you just make things do. It's what we used to call a kludge.
And for
those folks that don't believe that kludge is an actual dictionary word that you can use in Scrabble, look it up. It's out there. Kludge. Okay.
All right. Looks like we have one more from last
week. We have one more, and it's for my read, and it's called Crow's Call. And it's by Pixie652, and it's called Crow's Call. And oh my goodness, she had a whole host of prompts. So yeah, I like what she wrote in her AN. She says, I used prompts 38, 39, 41, 43, and 44, although basically anything with an animal in it was there. I like that. Very comprehensive. We have Crow's Call. Humanity has wasted itself away. The beasts have taken it upon themselves to replant, grow new roots. Even the greeneries themselves have crawled across the lands, finding black loam to dig into, leaving the bone dust and radioactivity for the crows, condors, the avian scavengers to clean under the dark clouds framing the dull black sun's rising. While Napoleonic hogs and royal frogs, regal rabbits and lemur magistrates demand the rest around us, my talons remove pathogenic corpses and weeds that have found solace in fractured sapient skulls, taking them to the bony hands of earthen spirits who rid this world of any evidence that the wretched human race resided on our dry, splitting earth of beiges. I am lonely out here. My charcoal beak, thick and solidified, only finds femurs and collarbones, 1860s funereal dresses, and on occasion I will see blackbirds with their bare skulls, vine-straggled spines and ribs, or vultures with their sagging, speckled skin that hangs around their hands and necks. And even once I saw a bird holding a cage, her hands gloved in white. How strange it must have been holding what once held you. How peculiar it must seem that we are picking up the carrion pieces of our former oppressors, knocking down telephone poles and brick factories that brought their demise, dragging cases and bags, cargo nets full of broken pine branches and broken limbs, worn, torn collar cuffs, and overzealous leftovers of a face their final look of horror sticking to their face like plaster. End poem. Wow. So, take it away, Dan.
Yeah, this is definitely very, very interesting. So, you know what this actually reminded me of? This actually reminded me of... First of all, I'm sorry, I was just reading Pixie652's description. Her little quick description of herself is, wash your hands of this when you're done. But that was kind of interesting. this actually reminded me of the pandemic, and I just couldn't get past the first part. Humanity has wasted itself away. The beasts have taken it upon themselves to replant, grow new roots. I don't know if everybody else experienced this as well, too, but when the pandemic... And I swear this happened to me. I don't know if I've told anybody this before. Before the pandemic, I was having visions of like the movie Omega Man, where there was just where nobody was around. Like, I don't know, I'd be walk down the street at nighttime and it would be like there was nobody here. It's very weird. Like, I was almost foreseeing what was going to happen. And then when the pandemic hit, like 2-3 months after, so it hit, if you remember, everybody started going home in February. Is when everybody started kind of going home. The pandemic hit before them, but that's when everyone started isolating. So that springtime, animals were everywhere. Like they, it's not like they were, you know, taking over, but I could just see them places they weren't before. And it was very, very weird, like how fast it kind of happened. So, and this also reminded me of the book Animal Farm. Especially what it said, while the Napoleonic hogs and royal frogs, regal rabbits, lemur magistrates demand the rest of the ground, my talons remove pathogenic corpses and weeds. Kind of reminded me, I don't know if anybody's read, who's read Animal Farm and who hasn't. Very enthralling, very, very almost scary book. Like, I was a little scared almost reading it.
I think it was supposed to be.
Yeah, it was supposed to be scary. It was an interesting book, but it kind of reminded me of that. She really created... almost that interesting kind of sci-fi fantasy world here that she showed. I thought it was really imaginative and interesting, and I love the descriptions that she got of this kind of world taken over by the animals. So it was a lot of fun. This is great. What are your thoughts, Gray?
I liked it. Bobby did a wonderful read on it. But, you know, the poem itself speaks to so many truths about modern society and the path that we're on, you know. Who's going to be able to take over the world but the vegetation and the birds? It's a wonderful statement on modern life and the aftermath of that. So just a wonderful poem.
Yeah, I agree. I always, it really is. I always wonder what would happen if humans disappeared in, like, you know, 1,000 years from now. Like, I don't think it would take too long for things to get overgrown, and you know, a lot of what we've done just to be gone. You did a fantastic read, Bobby. That is correct, that Gray said.
Thank you.
What'd you think while you were reading it?
Oh, this is rich with visual imagery. It really, really is. The storytelling in this is absolutely superb. She just conjures this vision of this post-apocalyptic world where the only things that have survived are the animal life, and they have begun their own civilization and their own cleanup and their own restoration, as it were. And it does smack a little bit of Animal Farm. I'm glad you said that, because it does remind me of that in the structure. But with Animal Farm, the principle behind that was all animals are equal, but some are more equal than others, and then the pigs took over. This seems to level the playing field for everyone, or all the animals that are currently, and I like the way she sees all the animals wearing clothing, and she's reconstructed an animal civilization based on that. And I think it's wonderfully imaginative, and it's a it's a It has its bleak moments in it, certainly, because we're talking about the downfall of Homo sapiens. You know, we're not careful, we're headed in that direction. But seriously, you know, you're right. If you have any doubts at all about the persistence of nature, just go back to one of the contests we had where the photographs and just go, as a matter of fact, go out onto the internet and look for photographs done by urban explorers who like finding abandoned buildings, abandoned factories, abandoned hospitals, and abandoned farmhouses especially. You see an abandoned residence, you'll see how nature is busily reclaiming what man has erected. And as a classic example, something I was watching the other night, look at what has happened to the Titanic. It is being reclaimed by iron-eating bacteria.
Wow.
And so everything returns to nature. Nature is persistent. It will not be denied, as the chaos theory expert in Jurassic Park said. He was absolutely right. So anyway, I really did enjoy this, though. I thought it was a stellar piece of writing, absolutely stellar. So that knocks off our last contest, and I think that was a fine finish. And so now
I just want to let you guys know that Weaver is on the line.
Yay! Let the party begin!
Hi, Weaver.
Hi.
Hey,
hello,
Weaver.
Hello. This is my personal best. It took me 32 minutes to log on. Whoa.
God love you,
okay.
Girl.
Well, we appreciate it. And I do want to note it that I didn't get that big of a hey when I came on. So very excited to get you there. That's all I wanted to say.
Well, thank you very much. I'm so happy I'm here.
I am happy, too. Thank you for your persistence. I said in my message earlier today, I miss your little Scottish lilt.
No, I think you've got that wrong, Bobby. You're the one who has the accent.
I had a lilt. I was not as good as
Well, I'm glad to be here.
So your timing is superb, because we just broke into the current contest for this show, and it is the Magical Whimsy of James C. Christensen, mm-hmm. who is unfortunately no longer among us. However, I chose his artwork specifically for this contest, being Christmas Eve, because of his show of angels and saints and, mm-hmm. and Saint Christopher, the Santa Claus, and I thought the subject matter was so apropos, and mm-hmm. and the illustrations were so elegant and suitable to the season. So I was hoping that that would generate some interest, and it certainly it almost has his work almost has a Renaissance like a Ghirlandaio flavor to it. Ghirlandaio was the muralist who did the murals in the Santa Croce, of the church in Florence. Beautiful stuff. So yeah, beautiful stuff. So let's tee up the first one, and we should have a sound cloud for this one, because Titus always gives us a sound cloud.
And yep, I think we do.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll take a look.
Okay, thank you.
You bet. Okay, here we go.
A weight of some distinction feigned. To stand out from the crowds, a gracious good accounts themselves. Best prepared to supersede, prove beyond the said worth a poet should leave his words, pronounced the wife. I plead, after which the crowds did come, reactions froze. During this life didst infamy farewell. Intrigues who after all have faced such woes. The people who have laughed the wife's long hell. There stands among us all the Shakespeare play. Tragedy awaits thee. The center stage, painful and remorseless. Thence to outweigh, to lift ourselves, one must, in rapture, gauge a pound of flesh. 'Tis fame that poets yearn. His words do leave no blood for us to learn.
Well, that was fun. I do love his voice, and that kind of music. I will say, just off topic, probably is I love that kind of Renaissance music. I really do. I don't know why. It takes me to a time. I love movie music and TV music, and I love music that has a picture. And so that was great there. Awesome, Felwyn. Why don't we start with you?
Will you start with Weaver?
I mean, Weaver. What did I say? Felwyn? I'm sorry. Yeah. I had a very long day today. Weaver, that's what I meant, Weaver.
No more for you.
Yes, let's start with you.
Yes, of course. Yes, I think this is, you look at the picture prompt, the listener. It's apropos of anybody who listens. I have to say, I am one of the world's big ears. People love to talk because I don't talk a lot, so I just listen very well. And it saves me making conversation, which is what this chap looks like he's doing. He's zoning out enough already. Yeah, beautiful. I mean, the pictures are absolutely wonderful. You're right, Bobby. But I do love the way he's talking about Shakespeare. Not that I know that much about, or as much as most would know, but I think his phrasing and his words are absolutely wonderful. And I love to hear people translating and trying to get it into the English that we would understand. But obviously this at the end of it is talking about pound of flesh. His word leave no blood for us to learn. Yes, I think it's a beautiful, beautiful piece of poetry and very well done. So thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you. I liked it. I really liked the line. There stands among us all a Shakespeare play. Tragedy awaits the center stage. That's pretty deep, and I could see how he got that out of this picture. I thought that was interesting. Gray, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought he did a wonderful read on that. You know, his sound card was spot on. But you know, I like the way this refers to Keats in the final doublets. And, as poets, you know, we want to be known and we seek that fame and glory. And yet there's a melancholy to that that's definitely captured in this poem. So I thought he did a wonderful job expressing that.
Absolutely. Bobby, I know you were very excited. What did you say last week? You said you were so excited because our first entry was from Titus.
Yeah, it was Titus. Yeah, and he is very selective about what he writes, so when I saw his entry, I thought he must have been inspired by the artwork, which I took as a personal triumph to draw Titus Llewellyn into our contest. Because I do enjoy his style of writing. It is very he has a very classic, very lyrical style, which I can say from having attempted it is certainly not easy to do consistently with grace and with the proper language, which he always be able to capture, and with the two prompts that he selected, interestingly enough, with the listener who is surrounded, I mean, it sits with serenity in what appears to be the middle of this cacophony of people and this haphazard melange and then the angel at the bottom, I thought was an interesting combination. The two were. I said afterwards, the crowds did come. Reactions froze. During this life, didst infamy farewell. Intrigues who, after all, have faced such woes. The people who have left a wife's. There stands among us all a Shakespeare play. What a wonderful passage there. I mean, and Shakespeare himself saying, life is a play, and all among us are players who strut the stage. It's just interesting how he wove that in there. I really enjoyed this piece.
Yeah, it was very, very deep and beautiful. There's so much in it. I did not get to read the pieces ahead of time, but I'm definitely going to read that one again. Absolutely. Let's continue on. And I have up Azure Angel by M.J. Donnelly. And I don't think we had Weaver read yet, correct?
Correct. Is there a SoundCloud?
Oh,
am
yeah,
I wrong?
You know what? Guess what? You're off the man. I'm sorry. I had a crazy day today. There is a SoundCloud, so yes, you're off the key. So the next reading one is all yours.
Okay.
There is a SoundCloud. There is a SoundCloud. I am off my game.
I'm playing that one.
Benediction from an Azure Angel by M.J. Donnelly. Lavender mists in soft layers. The choir sings. Enchanting prayers, frankincense and myrrh waft on breeze. Prostrate I fell from bended knees. God's herald shines with azure glow, stirring with an electric flow. I hear a buzzing, much like bees. Prostrate I fell from bended knees. Just as Job, you have endured much. The angel says, with sateen touch, your heart, indeed, puts him at ease. Prostrate, I fell from bended knees. Peace, he gifts, the rest of your days, for your strength and reverent praise. He notes your heart, for it does please. Prostrate, I fell from bended knees.
What a great read. I say this a lot as well too. You know, I get compliments sometimes on my voice for some people, but then I come on here and I listen to people read and I'm like, man, you know, I'm like a cold sneeze compared to some people that read on this place. What a great voice and a great read by Mr. Donnelly. And great rhyming too. Absolutely. What'd you think, Gray?
Well, he says I lost my page here. Okay. He says it's a Creel form, and I guess that's the repetition of the lines at the end. But I found those quite intriguing, you know, that they're on each stanza. And prostrate, I fell from bended knees, you know, and that's to lay out and, you know, in reverence to somebody that you're worshiping. And so, you know, it's just a fascinating rite, you know, that he has all these trials and tribulations, and yet he still has love and reverence for the Creator. So just a beautiful poem, a wonderful read as well.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I actually spent some time the other day with my wife. She was trying to show me an exam, like, what exactly is a Zur? Because I was an artist, so she was combing the skies, looking for what Azure should be in the skies. But I like the description here of that. God herald shines with Azure glow. How about you, Weaver? What'd you think of it?
Oh, I think this is it's got this mystical quality, softness about it, and beautifully written. I mean, you know, you can feel the faith basically leaping out at you from this particular piece of poetry. And I am a sucker for the lines that are repeated. I love that. For me, somehow, it just brings everything together. It holds it. And it's obviously a comforting feeling as well for the listener or the reader to know that that's going to be there on the next stanza. Oh, good, there it is again. I think it's wonderful. There's obviously somebody who's endured so much, and without asking why, just gets on with it. And I think that is just comes out in this so beautifully. So, yes, I think it's a wonderful piece of work. Well read. Thank you, Mr. Donnelly. We enjoyed it.
Excellent, Weaver. Thank you. And Bobby, you've been formulating these thoughts. I know it.
I enjoy this piece. I really like what he has done with his prompts. He has taken two angels and has given us, and I like even the top benediction from an azure angel. Beautiful. It sounds like a prayer. Lavender mists in soft layers, a choir sing chanting prayers. Frankincense and myrrh waft on breeze. Prostrate, I fell from bended knees. And I like the refrain at the end of each one. It's a brevity. It's a beautiful, beautiful. This is a very elegant piece of poetry. The rhyming is spot on. It has a very lyrical, very classical feel to it. And it's a pleasure to read and a pleasure to listen to. I mean, in the last stanza, peace he gifts the rest of your days for your strength and reverent praise. He notes your heart, for it does please. Prostrate, I fell from bended knees. It's just beautiful from start to finish. Really enjoyed this piece.
Absolutely. Cool. All right, so Weaver, so I lied. Instead of having you read, what I was going to do is, Damn It Dave is on, actually. Damn It Dave said that Kyra Lee, I'm probably pronouncing it wrong, is the poetry form. And Robbie came on, too. Hey, folks, quiet Christmas Eve for me, just chilling, doing things like the most.
Outstanding.
Poetry, movies, et cetera. So we got a couple of couple on the board there.
Outstanding. I hope they brought enough eggnog for everyone.
Exactly. Yeah, you got to share, guys. And yeah, thanks, Dave. It was a great poem. We really enjoyed it. If you heard us read it,
yeah, really.
So I lied. Instead of having you read, I actually posted yours, and I think you have a SoundCloud as well, too.
Yes, I do.
All right.
Okay, I'm going to play that now.
Thank you,
Dave. The town was alight with the news going around. The fable maker was passing through tomorrow. It was said that he had a new story, not yet heard, more thrilling than any before, which was doubtful. How could he better the snake and the basket? There could not be a creepier tale than the hand. Hundreds had slept with candles burning after hearing how the nurse with the needle decimated a town. The day came, all gathered, eager to hear the new tale. The fable maker sat down, cleared his throat, and began. You must listen diligently for the busy sound of bees, heralding the visit of Queen Bee to your village or town. Bee might be here for a short time, but when she leaves, each flower will have no pollen, there'll be no honey made. My advice to you gathered here is, do not plant any flowers. Grow vegetables and grains, laugh in her face, and she'll leave. With that he, Tweedledum and Tweedledee, left, whilst the villagers cut down and buried every flower.
Excellent. Thanks for the SoundCloud. Always appreciate it. Before we get on to your poem, Damn It Dave said it is pronounced Kiriel. So thank you for correcting me. I knew I was pronouncing that wrong. Yeah, this is a lot of fun, and I love, you know, I gravitated actually toward this picture as well, too, and I'm really glad that you talked about the storyteller, which was, you know, the YouTube of the, 14, 1500s, right, was this guy right here in the picture. Right, Gray, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I thought you did a beautiful read on that, Weaver, and I liked your poem, your storyline here. The town was alight with news going around the Babel Maker was passing through tomorrow. It was said he'd add a new story, not yet heard, more thrilling than any before, which was doubtful. I mean, that just pulls you right into the storyline of the queen bee showing up and, stealing all the honey, all the pollen and honey, and these villagers cut down and buried every flower. Just a beautiful poem. Excellent write and read.
Thank you.
Absolutely agree. Absolutely. Bobby, what do you think?
Present.
Oh.
I enjoyed this. I really did. I liked the story that you wove around it. I remember the Queen Bee prompt. I don't know if everyone that read the poem remembered that one. I liked it for some strange reason. I liked the coloring on it and the illustration and the woman there with the bees around her. And I like that you took these two prompts and blended them in such a way that the fable maker tells a story of the queen bee and how she steals honey from the village. It's wonderful storytelling, what I like about it. It's nested. It's storytelling about a storyteller. And storytelling, to my mind, is a dwindling art. People are so inundated by technology that to sit and listen to someone tell a story like older films, some of the films by Michael Powell, where the Indian a guru is sitting there telling stories, or the storyteller comes to town, or there's one person who's actually the chronicler in the town who knows the story of that town and who is actually also a historian. It's almost a lost art to be able to sit and weave and spin a tale. And I like the way you've told my advice to you here, gather, do not plant any flowers, grow vegetables and grains, laugh in her face, and she'll leave. I like that. It's like, it's like thumbing your nose at the queen bee, and she has nothing to gather, no pollen to gather, and so she leaves because there's a dearth of flowers. I enjoyed this thoroughly. I love your visual imagery.
Thank you.
Yeah. I agree with the storytelling thing. I've always argued that I don't know what you guys know about the board game Dungeons and Dragons, but I could argue multiple games as the greatest games of all time. But I always argue that's the greatest game of all time because it's literally just people sitting around a table telling stories. That's literally what it is. Just this guy who's a dungeon master and sits there and he just says, okay, here's what happened. You're walking down the road and you see this and this happens, and then the players decide what's going to happen next, and they come up with the next part. It, literally people creating stories together. And it is, it is something that's kind of like a lost art form, trying to entertain each other with the stories. Did you have anything you wanted to talk about, Weaver, with the poem?
Not really. It's just I tend to think of myself more of a storyteller because it makes me enjoy what I'm doing more, telling a tale or whatever. As I said before, I'm not very great with anything other than that. I have tried, but a bit clumpy, I think. But I do like to tell tales. So thank you very much. You've all been very kind.
But that in itself is a gift.
Absolutely.
Because you're gifting your imagination to other people, to your listeners.
Oh, yeah. I suppose that's right. That sounds good. Thank you.
And now you can... Now you can say you're a storyteller about a storyteller.
Oh, even better. Yes.
You told a story about a storyteller, so there you go.
Oh, wow.
Absolutely.
We're building on this.
I'm telling you, yeah. All right, so speaking of building, I have like 45 different pages up here. I'm trying to figure out where I am. I had all kinds of crazy crap going on today, so everybody's got to forgive me. Gray is back. So Gray, I already forgot. Did you get to comment on Weaver's poem? I don't know if you got to hear it or comment.
Yes, I did.
Okay, yep. And Robbie asked me if I had lost it when I came across the Beholder. Yes, for those Dungeons and Dragons fans. Yes, the Beholder, I always liked him. Anyway, I have put one up a little ways back on the board if everybody wants to look at that, and I think it's my turn to read. So I will read Spilled Epiphanies.
Albert, it's a feminine voice.
Well, this one's not too – you want to read it? You always like reading
Spilled Epiphanies? Yeah, that's feminine voice. That's Amy Mundell.
I would love it if you read that. Go for it. Good idea.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Spilled Epiphanies. Runny liquid gold, immaterial, yet it sticks like a hair to damp fingers. Felt, but intangible. Elusive as a candle flame, with consciousness as its wick. Caught between layers of haze and self, as you try to brush it into palms and fingers and discard it onto the blank pages you wrap yourself in. The white turns to gold and scribbles and scrawls, haphazard, desperate lines of transferred epiphany, burning, consumed in the cold liquid metal of it, perched on a knife edge between uncomfortable, pleasurable, and lost. A soft caress of static energy which drains you as it drains to the pages, yet more amber answers fill and spill until fingers fail to catch the words before they lose purchase and fall to the void below, leaving only the hazy galaxy cloud imprint of their presence, their essence no longer viscous enough to pull them to a page, lost to a yawning gap and a yawning fission, when frustrated fingertips come back empty.
You are a great reader there, Captain. I like it. And her liner notes say, starts with Proverb 39's internal concentration mixed with the pooling of the gold around the mind. Then most of the rest of the prompt is 11, epiphany, with trying to reach for it and bring it back to paper. Also with reference to the candle flame of 55. And then she says, and just out of reach, which is prompt 59. It's really great when the poets embrace the artists themselves and look at multiple. We've had that already a couple of times now when they embrace multiple paintings, and it really, you know, captures the artist. That's really a great thing, and Amy did an awesome job with that. Weaver, start with you.
Uh-huh. Yes, I have to say this is just amazing. I do love her work. It's only been about the last 3 weeks, 4 weeks or so, I think, that I've noticed Amy coming forward more. But this is wonderful. I kind of like to write about writing how we do it and what we grasp at. And this is just what this is about. So beautifully done. Every stanza, I mean, you could pick any stanza and it would stand alone. But caught between layers of haze and self, as you try to brush it onto palms and fingers and discard it onto the black pages you wrap yourself in. Now, that's just perfect, isn't it? Such a lovely piece of work. Thank you very much, Jamie, for sharing. I really enjoyed it. And your read, by the way, was wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah, I agree. I have nothing but inspiration from everybody on this website. It's amazing the talent, the poetic and just writing talent on here. Gray, what do you think?
You know, I thought it was beautiful. Excellent read, Bobby. But, you know, I think she captures the struggle that, you know, a writer faces as he tries to do his art. And so it was just totally engaging in that aspect. beautifully written and well read, Bobby.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And Bobby, since you read it so well, how did you think you read it, and what did you think of the poem? What did you think of it?
Well, I'm taking an opportunity to scan quickly the prompts that she listed, and looking at the titles of them. Of course, the first one she lists, Love and His Epiphany. Prompt 39, the title of it is Sometimes the Spirit Touches Us Through Our Weaknesses, which I thought was interesting how she wove that in there. And she's got 55 and 59, which as I scanned for, 59 has been used once already. 55 is, it's interesting, Touching the Hem of God is the title of the piece. As a young woman reaching out to touch a hem, and that's all you see is the hem. And the 59 is the, Titus Llewellyn's, the woman, the blonde woman with the candle and the long sleeves, and how she was able to take those four prompts and weave those into this really splendid piece of writing. Deeply philosophical. I think this is a very cerebral piece too, caught between layers of haze and self as you try to brush it onto palms and fingers and discard it onto the blank pages you wrap yourself in. And then white turns to gold and scribbles and scrolls, desperate lines of transferred epiphany. It's just beautiful, beautiful writing, the way she's taken the elements of the different prompts. It's until fingers fail to catch the words before they lose purchase and fall to the void below, leaving only the hazy galaxy cloud imprint of their presence. Again, this is so elegant. This is a really splendid piece of work. Well done, Amy. Well done. Great interpretation of the prompts.
Yeah, I agree. We had a little bit more lighthearted last time, and this one, even though it is kind of whimsical, it's very, very, very deep, very interesting poems. This some really, really good ones coming out of here. Excellent. All right, so this one, I think I will try to read. This would be from Pee-wee, so I'll give it a shot. I'm putting it up here. Let me just find it. All right, so this is called, and he put a little key on there to show how to pronounce the words he came. I don't know if these are real words or not, or if they sound like Latin. But Beatus est Pisiculus. If you can read this, then you really should be able to sing this. Did I say it right? Did I say it right? How do they say? How do you say it?
Okay, go ahead. Go for it.
Beatus est Pisiculus, which I won't be able to sing at Pee-wee, sorry. I'm not really singing. If you can read this, then you really should be able to sing this. What are we if not swimming out in our own self, made sea, contrived of doubts not to be seen, built atop fork-tongued misery? In life of all obstacles you meet, be it knave, harlot, or thief, one shining wisdom eventually dissipates, forgot without belief. In a lifetime from man ne'er you see had it ere pitted, you versus me. It was always as I'd seen you versus the world in just me versus me. Beatus est Pisiculus. As if it's so we could ever be, it has surely occurred to me. Yeah, Beatus est Pisiculus, that it might be just how to be, always like those fish in the sea. Swim along, you blessed little fishes. Find the prawn to do all your dishes. Benediction for those who survive this, coming to you through divine wishes. It is Beatus est Pisiculus. Sing the sorrows away from your life, then sing of the tomorrows sans strife. All right, Beatus est Pisiculus. Sing of the waiting out through the night, and sing that nothing and everything's all right. He has a fade out. Beatus S. Pisicellus, it don't matter if you're barefoot or toothless. Beatus S. Pisicellus, what you've done seems we've been through it. Just Beatus S. Pisicellus, how do you survive when you're that stupid? And benediction, blessed are the little fishes in the poem. So anybody who wants to go and sing this on their own, I think he was trying to write a little song, which I think he did a fun job on. What'd you think? This is very interesting. Gray, what'd you think?
You know, I thought it was a fascinating quote. Blessed are the little fishes, and that's who we are, is the little fishes. And, you know, in a life of obstacles, you'll meet, be it knave, harlot, or thief, one shining wisdom eventually dissipates, forgot without belief. In a lifetime for man, ne'er you see, had it e'er pitted you versus me. It was always as I'd seen you, versus the world, and me, just versus me. I mean, that's haunting language right there. It's beautifully penned and descriptive and engaging throughout.
Yeah, I agree. I haven't... Like I said earlier, I usually get to read them, and I had kind of a crazy day. I didn't get to read ahead of time, but this one definitely deserves another read. It's very interesting, just even this, the way it was written. What do you think, Weaver?
Oh, I agree, yes. I don't actually normally read any of the poetry either, because I love to be surprised. I just love the unexpectedness of what you suddenly get to read, and this is one of those unexpectedly. Very good. So, yes, poor us, little fishes. At least we're not goldfish in a bowl. That would be even worse, wouldn't it? Just going round and round and round. No, I wouldn't like that. But this is beautiful. I like it so much. Beatus-esque. It's great that you said it so often, because I thought I had it on my tongue, but I'm afraid it's not. Beatus-esque. Beatus. Yes.
I don't think I said it the same time every time. I don't know what I was saying. I tried Pee-wee, sorry.
Oh, it's Pee-wee. Pee-wee, my darling, he always does this. He's got this beautiful way of leaving you tongue-tied and feeling like a complete and absolute idiot. And I love it. I just love it. Because he has this knack, such a wonderful knack of bringing in things and make you think about what's going on rather than just read. So, yes, thank you so much for sharing, Pee-wee, and for making my life more difficult. Love you so much.
Excellent. And Bobby, you were hemming to read this one, so I know you have some thoughts already before we even started.
When I was working with Neutron Bomb, anything that had any kind of foreign language in it, she would toss over the fence at me. I actually try
to do that. If you were basically anybody but me, but if like you're on, I do try to purposely do that.
Yeah, I don't mind that. I have a facility for these things. Beatus est Pisicellus. Blessing to the little fishes. And the prompt, if you look at it, it is an angel reaching out, and it says above the angel's arm, Beatus. Pisicellus, and then there's a little fish at the end trying to meet the angel's fingertip. It's a delightful, whimsical little piece, but he's taken this whimsical little piece and given it some gravitas, and which I thought was quite clever. He's likened humans to the little fishes in life of all obstacles you meet. Be it knave, harlot, or thief, one shining wisdom eventually dissipates, forgot without belief. In a lifetime for man, ne'er you see, had it e'er pitted you versus me. It was always as I'd seen you versus the world, and just me versus me. This is a very cerebral piece. There's a lot of philosophy in it. It does definitely merit, it's one of those pieces that merits several readings and careful scrutiny. Because, like Kyle does, he has this artful way of weaving humor and deep thought together, and it's as Gilbert and Sullivan had said in one of their songs, he puts a grain of truth among the chaff, and he does it with such skill and panache that it makes his rhyming in here also is so melodious. It makes his pieces a real delight to read, and I really enjoyed this. I like what he did with the prompts, and I say, well done, Kyle. Thank you for contributing this. Really enjoyed it.
Absolutely, absolutely. If you guys wouldn't mind indulging me for a second here, my computer, you can still hear me, right? This has just been one of those days. Christmas Eve or not, it's deciding to, you might have to take over, Bobby, because my computer is not working very well here.
Oh,
I might
your
have
computer
to restart.
Uniform?
I'm on the computer talking, but it's like not letting me do anything. So I was going to put Damn It Dave up next. He's got one now,
okay.
And he just mentioned that he was thinking of Monty Python's Fishy Fish, which might explain his next poem, The Pig That Saved
okay.
Christmas.
Oh, well, this is actually, let me put this up. There it is. And it actually, there is, in the contest, there is an illustration, and the title is The Christmas Pig. And it is a picture of Santa, or Santa, a character, sitting on the back of a pig. And I believe that's prompt scrolling. Prompt 44, The Christmas Pig. And so there we are. Would you like to read it, Dave? Daniel? Oh, you read the last one. That's right. So who would you like to read this one?
Daniel has dropped.
Dan?
Daniel has dropped.
He has? Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
His computer.
Okay.
Kicked him off.
Well, you know what? I'll grab it. Okay. Pig that saved Christmas. The reindeer called in sick again. The sleigh is in the shop. Complaining elves have been a drain because their work won't stop. But Santa needs to make his rounds like every Christmas Eve. And so he walks the snowy grounds and hopes he can conceive a notion that will get the toys around the world that night. And suddenly he hears a noise and sees a pig in flight. Oh, pardon me, the old man pleads, but I could use your aid. You're just the thing that Santa needs to join in this crusade. So Santa tells the pig his plight and why he's feeling blue. The pig then smiles with teeth so bright. I'll gladly go with you. And so with that, the plight is solved. And then they prepare to leave. A flying pig becomes involved, thus saving Christmas Eve. End poem. Great, great piece of whimsy. What did you think of this, Weaver?
Exactly that, yes. Great piece of whimsy. I thought that was and so beautifully written, so that it just, you know, bounced along, easy to read, comfortable, beautifully worded. I love the rhyming. I thought it was great. I had looked at that picture, and now I think, oh, I wish I had written to it, because it is lovely, isn't it? A little
it is.
Pig. It really is sweet. Yes, I think you did a beautiful job, Dave. I liked it so much. And it does show Dave's sense of humor, doesn't it? It comes across
yes,
so easily. Yeah. But pig in flight, brilliant. Pigs are flying. I love it. So, yes, thank you for sharing that with us.
It just reminds me of the dialogue from The Lion in Winter. Between Catherine of Aragorn and the king, her husband, and he says pigs will fly before I release you from your captivity, and she looks at him and says, then there'll be pork in the treetops come morning.
Oh, very good. So that their phrase goes back that far, does it? Oh, that's wonderful. Pigs will fly.
That was from the it was a play by William Golden that was turned into a film, and it was called The Lion in Winter, and it was Katharine Hepburn played Catherine of Aragon, and Peter O'Toole plays the king, and of course he chews up the scenery. And actually, it was only the second film that Anthony Hopkins ever did.
Really? Wow.
Yes.
Oh, wonderful actors and actresses.
He plays Finch Richard. And mm-hmm. if you've never seen the film, I recommend it. I recommend it strongly because the dialogue is now it was a play, so the film is done almost as a play. But the dialogue is brilliant. I'm going to depart for a second. I'm going to go a little tangential here. There's a scene where Catherine is in her bedchamber and her three sons are in there. There's John, there's Jeffrey, who is the middle one, and there's Richard, who is the eldest, who she wanted to be king, and John, who was the Prince John that everyone identifies with Robin Hood. So they're all bickering, and Richard pulls a knife, and John screams, "He's got a knife! He's got a knife!" And Catherine, she says, "Of course he's got a knife. We all have knives. It's 1183, and we're barbarians."
Oh, how clever is that?
Oh yes, it is. It is a brilliant play.
Oh, sounds it. Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, but that's what it reminded me of. But it's a delightful piece. When I posted that, I was hoping someone would rise to the challenge on that. And Dave, with his usual lively sense of humor and great facility for whimsy, has done just an absolutely splendid job on this. The rhyming is spot on. It's great storytelling, and it's quite brief. I mean, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 stanzas of 4 lines, so not very long. And he also used the Kris Kringle one of the other Kris Kringles as prompt. Well done, Dave. What did you think, Ray?
I loved it. The pig that saves the Christmas day is fascinating. You know, I thought he did a wonderful take on the prompt, and he says the pig's teeth replaced Rudolph's nose with his bright white teeth. So, it was a fun write. You know, whimsical and endearing for sure.
And it would almost make a good children's story, the way he did that. I mean, it has that quality about it, that departure from what is usually identified as reindeer carrying Santa forward. It's very cute. Okay, well, we've lost Dan, huh?
I'm here. I'm back.
Okay. Are you back to posting, or would you like me to do that?
I can take over. Yes, I figured out the computer. The computer figured out me is probably more like it.
Well, I was going to say, was it percussive maintenance? Did you just go get a bigger hammer?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I smacked it enough times that it decided to work.
Oh, dear.
I just want to say about the poem is I think Dave and I need to hang out because with his whimsicality and his Monty Python references, that's Dave and I have to have a beer and talk craziness, I think. The next one we have by Gerald Green, and I believe there is a SoundCloud for this one.
Yay!
Okay, I'll play that now.
Excellent.
Cause and Effect, written and read by Gerald Green. To correlate in times like these might seem a simple thing. A needle here, a thimble there implies what actions bring. Anxiety spread silently has grown in recent years. I've watched it seep and seen it flow, increasing stress and fears. 1 in 3 now show its signs. Society is stricken, with anxious people everywhere, unwell, unfit, and smitten. On Christmas Eve, it hits its peak, when all should feel its peace. And yet, when 1 in 5 believes in Santa, blessings cease. To perpetrate a well-known lie has mental consequence, as guilt creates anxiety amid this false suspense. So, correlate, accept the truth, connect the dots like me. Do not support this Christmas hoax. Just decorate a tree. End poem.
Great read. Everybody should check out Joe, by the way. He's got 5 books out, this guy. He's definitely prolific, and he's got a great YouTube page where he has tons of readings on it. So definitely check that out. Perfect timing for a Christmas, too, so thanks, Gerald. What do you think, Ray? Good to start with you.
I thought he did a fabulous read on that poem. And can you come speak to me?
Yes. Hey, your dog liked it, too, I guess. Wow. That's great. Hey, we're reaching all different types of fauna over here. Humans and dogs. Weaver, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I really, really enjoy this. I do tend to like it's neat, and that's not anything against the particular way this is written. I love neat because you can see exactly and hear exactly what you're supposed to, and I love the way it slowly goes on and tells you just how bad everything is because people do stress about Christmas, and it's sad because come Christmas Day and they can sigh and relax. Everything is forgotten, and you go back to your own life and everything's fine. But I think this is so clever because it's letting you know that, yes, everybody feels a little bit that way. And if you don't believe in Father Christmas, just decorate a tree. Very clever. I do love it. Yeah, every stanza is just exactly what I would have thought myself about Christmas. So I think it's beautifully done. So thank you very much for sharing that with us, Gerald. Wonderful.
Yeah, everybody in my family is older. We all have older kids, and we've kind of decided, I do presents with my son, but with everybody else when we visit, we don't really do that anymore. And every time I've said it to everybody, they're like, thank God. Like, we just have very, just mellow. We just go visit. We just hang out. There's no, trying to do this. Hurry up. Try to make this food. We just go out and just make it low-key, and it's so much more, fun as opposed to, all the society, pressures that Christmas has put on. So, I got to talk to Bobby today, and it seemed like she was having a nice anxiety-free Christmas. What do you think? What do you think today, Bobby?
I think I'm still having an anxiety-free Christmas.
Excellent. That's great.
Oh yeah. Well, when you're an orphan, it doesn't require much.
Oh, there you go.
I enjoyed this. I like that he's taken the two of the Santa prompts and drawn some heavy philosophy from these two rather lighthearted illustrations. He's right. Anxiety spreads silently, has grown in recent years. I've watched it seep and seen it flow, increasing stress and fears. I watch it too. It's 1 in 3 now shows its signs. Society is stricken with anxious people everywhere, unwell, unfit, and smitten. I've watched the mission creep. I've watched the commercial. I watched the stores. Their preparations for Christmas used to traditionally begin the day after Thanksgiving, and they've crept into through November and have now got the tendrils that reach into Halloween, and it's just it's more and more the trying to milk as much commercialism as let's get more people to buy things they don't need, and it's just it's discouraging to see this creep of commercialism, and especially from someone like me who traditionally, except before I got COVID, which just absolutely destroyed my energy, I would make all my gifts. I would make gift baskets, and I would bake, and I would make candy, and I would make cookies, and I would make homemade liqueurs, and I would give those as gifts, which I hope to be able to go to back to next year. It's almost as though the spirit of the season is lost in the compulsion to shop and to decorate and to prepare, and it's become less of a joyous season and more of a tribulation than anything else. And to penetrate a well-known lie has mental consequence, as guilt creates anxiety amidst this false suspense. I'm one of those people that when I had family, I would shop for Christmas all year long. I'll never forget the first year that my partner and I were together, and I came home one day and I said, look what I got for Donna, my sister-in-law. I said, look what I got for Donna for Christmas. And he looks at me and goes, it's April. I said, yeah, so? He goes, you bought that for Christmas? I said, yeah, I'm not going to be able to find it in December. And he goes, our first year, he goes, you're getting Christmas presents now? I said, I've been doing that for years. And he goes, you're never going to remember where they are. I said, bet me. And October came and he says, okay, yeah. He said, okay, let's trot out what you've got. And I had everything because I'd been doing this since I was a private in the Marine Corps. I would buy stuff all year long and stash it in my footlocker. And then when Christmas came, I had all kinds of gifts for everybody, and people thought I'd spent a small fortune, which actually I'd been buying all year long. Just little. You see things that people like, and you here and there, and you just grab them when you see them. And when I produced all these gifts in October, he looked at me and goes, "Oh," he said, "You remember?" I said, "Yeah," and he never questioned me again. But it's just people go out this time of year. And it's like there's this pressure to go get something for everyone. And I think the most important thing is you give of yourself.
Exactly. I agree.
Exactly. Yeah, 100%. I'm going to stand on the soapbox for 1 second here. Nobody else remembers this with me. But in the 80s, at least around where I was, there was this push on television for Grandparents' Day. And it was just in June or something. It was sometime when there weren't holidays. And I'm like, and even then when I was like younger, I'm like, no, Grandparents' Day. That's mother. Like, it was just obviously retail trying to get some other holiday that people had to buy presents for. And it never took off. Nobody ever did it. But yeah, there's this, so we weren't really cheap. I don't have a lot of money this year. We weren't really cheap, and we just bought stuff. And even like my sister, her dog passed away very recently, that was very close to the family, and my nephew's coming home for the first time. So my sister was like, I just want you to come over and distract us. Just be here and just hang out with us. So, we're not thinking of the dog, because it was very, very close. The dog was really important to them. They had it for a long time, and he just passed away just recently. So, and I thought about that really is Christmas, just going over there and being there and those type of memories.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
I love giving presents to people. I think that's it's a fun thing, but it gets overly commercial. I agree.
That's why I always used to make my gifts when Tony and I were together.
Yep.
And I would plan these things. There were a lot of women in the family, aunts and grandmothers and sister-in-laws and what have you. So what I would do is I would plan, and I would do things like I would make pot holders by the dozens, and I'd put two together, and I'd throw them in a laundry bag, and I'd tie them in with bow, and I'd throw them in a laundry basket, and we'd go over to visit at Christmas time, because most all of his family is up in New York. And I'd take the laundry basket, and I'd say, pick out what you want. And I'd do the same thing with towel toppers. I'd make towel toppers, and I'd put them together in a bundle, and I'd just tell the ladies, pick out what you want. And it was, and
I think we should all be,
I would make the gifts, and it gives me an outlet for my creativity. And I talk to people. You don't run into too many people that give homemade gifts anymore.
That's
yeah, I
sad.
Think I think we should all be like hobbits. You give your guests presents on your birthday. That's the better way to do it. That's what Bilbo did on his birthday.
Yeah.
Anyway, we have another. Everybody must be sick of family today, and they're all coming on the board. We got Luke Jr. is joining, saying he tried to send the SoundCloud. We didn't get your SoundCloud, Luke, but we're glad you're on the board. And I actually put yours up next to be read. So if we could get maybe Gray to read that, that would be awesome.
Yep, absolutely. No problemo. Certes, Serge, by Luke Jr. Fragmented in a silent dream that is awoken through a seam, she's breathing in the oxygen that we're forced to share. Earth has no reason to be selfish. With eyes closed, she's less than a shellfish, because within her shell, she's as real as flesh, where veins keep her focused on hidden energy. Within her mind, she breathes again. Within her eyes, she leaves again. The warmth from a lonely candle keeps her sane. It keeps her focused again. It keeps her focused again. Fragmented in time of belief, dreams were nightmares. She's breathing in the oxygen that we're forced to share. Each has no reason not to care. With eyes closed, she walks a few steps closer. Within her reflection, she's a figure of perception. With each reflection, millions of tears behind eyes. It keeps her focused again. It keeps her focused again. Within her mind, she breathes again. Within her eyes, he leaves again. The warmth from a lonely candle keeps her sane. The warmth from a lonely heart keeps her in pain. It keeps her focused again. It keeps her focused. Keeps him focused again. End poem.
Excellent, Gray. Great job. And I don't know if this is on purpose, but I really like the imagery of the candle and the breathing. So she's breathing in the oxygen that we're forced to share. The warmth from a lonely candle keeps her sane. And I kind of almost like that, you know, there is something very nautic and soothing about the candles. And I'm almost seeing this parallel between the candle breathing and being and giving warmth, you know, which candles don't give warmth, but she's getting the warmth of kind of being near that candle and keeping her sane as well as breathing in. So I just thought those parallels are pretty amazing. Weaver, let's actually start with you on the comments.
Okay. I remember to unblock myself. That's good. Yes, this is such a beautiful, beautiful, basically this is talking about Earth having, I think, more or less having to fight to keep the warmth, to keep the sanity. Breathing, we're all breathing the same air. Oh, I think this is just so good. I really do. There's so much. I'm reading it as I go along because it's so good. Fragmented in a time of belief, dreams were nightmares. She's breathing in the oxygen that we're forced to share. Earth has no reason not to care. Oh, yes, I think this is very, very clever as well, which is lovely. And as you say, the use of that candle, that one candle, it's the light in the darkness. It's a slight warmth in the darkness. And I'm presuming that this is a way forward. We have to think and look forward. But yes, I did enjoy this very much. And thank you for sharing it, Luke. Great.
Excellent, excellent. Bobby, let's actually go with you. Instead of last, we'll have you go second.
He didn't list prompts, but I'm guessing that having scanned the prompts, there's two angels with candles. There's prompt 9 and there's prompt 59, which has been written to already. And there's an angel holding a candle. 59 is the more contemplative of the two. And I enjoyed this piece. I enjoyed the rhythm of it, the storytelling. It is another cerebral piece, fragmented in a time of belief. Dreams were nightmare. He's breathing in the oxygen that we're forced to share. Earth has no reason not to care. With eyes closed, she walks closer. Reflection, she's a figure of perception. With each reflection, millions of tears behind eyes. And I like the refrain. And he's got some internal rhyming there also that's very elegant. This is a beautifully written piece and a pleasure to read.
All I got to say is God bless you with 59 prompts, Bobby. That's all I got to say. I did one the other day that had you actually have 60 prompts. Just wanted to make sure I forgot how many. I did one the other day for another show I've been doing, and I put 5 prompts on. It took me like 45 minutes to get them. And so 59 prompts, you're my hero. That's why you do the contests, because you do such a great job. So exactly. And Gray, you did a great job reading it. What'd you think when you were reading it?
You know, it was a contemplative, right? Definitely introspective and a powerful read, a powerful write. So excellent write and excellent read as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Now, Bobby, you have ones that you like reading all of them, but I know there's some specifically. So just for you, I have one for Betty Page up for you to read, because I know you're going to read this one really good.
Well, Betty always does wonderful Sunryu chains. And she's done one here. Angels of Heaven. Illuminating pure hearts sparkling as diamonds, angels of heaven. Melodically sweet, harmonious voices sing, words caress your soul. Vivid shines so bright, comforting us all with love. They take on our pain. Cheer us up when down, life rips apart our wings. They'll sew them with love. Mend what's been broken, remain by our side always. Watch over our life. They don't abandon, for they'll save us from ourselves. Yes, no matter what. Sweet gift from our God, guiding us to still believe, to keep our faith strong. Give hope. Encourage, show us to love once again, a beautiful blessing. End poem.
Awesome read and so beautiful. I was almost tearing up a little bit. Just a great poem. And she's so funny because she, you know, her poems have a lot of explicit, so she kind of automatically, I think, like she has this written as explicit, which it's really not. I think she just automatically puts that on all of her poems. Because this one's certainly much more ethereal, and it's just beautifully written. Betty, as always, thank you. We always enjoy your work. Let's start again with you, Weaver.
Yes, this is such a lovely change. It's so beautiful, contemplative, and, as you say, ethereal, wonderful. I every stanza, again, we get this beautiful. You have to excuse me, I'm afraid my mouth is, I'm very dry, I do apologize. I don't talk much, so, hear me. So, cheer us up when down, when life rips apart our wings, they'll sew them with love. Mend what's been broken, remain by our sides always, watch over our life. It's a lovely thought, isn't it? It's so, it's a comforting thought. This is a comforting poet piece of poetry. There's nothing about it would make you worry. It's just uplifting, and it's sweet and very, very close to her heart, I think. I honestly think it is from the heart, totally. So I think it, thank you for sharing that with us, Betty. It's lovely.
Betty has very beautiful, loving thoughts. One of my favorites. She always does a great job. And I'm sure that Gray would agree with us as well, too. Right, Gray?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, she's a wonderful poetess. And, you know, this is definitely up there on my favorites of hers. It's powerfully engaging. It's a wonderful tale of angels and the role in our lives. So just a beautiful poem.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times my wife and I turn around and say, somebody up there is looking out for us because I don't know how the hell we made it through this. So they might not be, you know, little fat, you know, babies with wings, but there's somebody up there looking out for us. So absolutely. Somebody's looking out for you. I know that, Bobby. What do you always say? You have the, you know, you longest run in the military without seeing battle. There you go. That's somebody looking out for you right there.
Well, for the country anyway. I like
that.
That's
exactly.
Like, yeah. She's drawn from the prompt 11, which is Epiphany, which is the angel with or the girl with the golden around her head. But she's also drawn from one that no one else has touched, which is 29, which is Music of Heaven, which is a beautiful illustration. A woman, you see her from the back with a drape, and you see musicians in the foreground, and they almost look like angels playing music to her. And and the last one is the angel that's says the problem with wings, and the angel staring at the wings laying on the ground. And it is beautifully written. It's a very inspirational piece. And I like the fact. Pardon me. I like the fact that that was Dr. Pepper talking, not me. I like the fact that Betty shows us a side of herself that we don't often get to see. She is so skilled with her adult poetry and her sensual poetries, and she does such an elegant job with them. But she also has this side of herself. Where she the emotional and loving poetry that, like, she's done right here, very contemplative, very philosophical, but again, in her Centurio chains, very, very beautifully written, and very very economical write. Very her writing is very tight, and I admire her for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, she has great form on there, and. And yeah, I've always found her stuff to be even the sensual stuff to be very still have this beauty and this loving of life and this happiness. You know, she seems like somebody that really loves life and is happy and is you know, taking life for all that it is. And and this is, you know, the you know, spiritual side, right, of her, like we've all mentioned,
and very positive, very positive. This is for the season. Yeah, for the season, a very inspirational piece.
Yes, yes, absolutely, absolutely. Which we all need. You know, you all want hope. The last stanza says, "Give hope and courage. Show us to love once again. A beautiful blessing."
Okay. Well, what can we find out in the next 10 minutes?
Well, you know what? I thought, I don't know. We'll see how many we have left, but. If we do end on one, I thought it'd be really good to end with everybody's friend here, Pam Ray, who wrote for the show and was going to call in originally, but then couldn't. So we would be more than happy. And I think, Weaver, I think it's you. And I just posted that, if you wouldn't mind. This one's actually kind of like yours, so it'd be nice for you to read it. It's the same type of idea.
Yeah,
the same, painting.
Yes, she said earlier on this afternoon that we'd both written to the same prompt. which I thought was so cool. Okay, here we are. I hope I'll do my best if my voice doesn't go. Right. He is the fable maker, weaving wondrous tales, sending spirits soaring like ships with long, tall sails. He goes from town to town to offer mysteries of old, knowing that knowledge is worth far more than gold. He entertains villagers of each and every age. He fills his mind with stories, turning yet another page. He provides to all the people words of hope and cheer, plays music on a silver flute, plucks notes upon his lyre. And he spent many years traveling and hasn't got a home, but thanks to songs and fables, he never feels alone. He is the fable maker. He sparks imaginations, passing out a gift of love to people of all nations. End poem.
Excellent read. You did that just as we were. That line, and this is very obscure, but that line, but thanks to songs and fables, he never feels alone. It reminded me of a Art Garfunkel line, of all things, where he says, I have my poetry to protect me. And, mm-hmm. and you know that is interesting. I feel that way about music a lot, and about other things as well too. I will do that sometimes if I'm feeling, you know, scared or whatever. I'll lose myself in music and I do it in my head, and I'll just think of songs and I'll just kind of go through the songs. And I think there was a line from our scene in The Shawshank Redemption, if anybody saw that movie. When it's a great movie if you didn't. When the convict gets he plays this opera song and he's basically causing all kinds of havoc with it. But he plays it, and he gets sent down to the hole. And yeah, Mozart, yes, absolutely. And he says, I had Mozart with me, and he said, oh, they let you put the record player down there. He said, no, it's in my head, like I remembered it. So it's like he was, you know, thinking about Mozart to help him when he was down there. And like, you know, like you mentioned before, Bobby, the, it's kind of a lost art of the fable maker. You know, she hasn't the fable maker, but, you know, people making these fables and tales and you know, entertaining people like that is kind of a lost art. You know, we have it with movies, right? We have it with novels and all that, but there is something about the live performance, about people just sitting around telling stories. You know, now we tend to talk about our days, but it's not necessarily these fantastical things. It's just what we did for the day. We complain about gas prices, or I found this here. It's not as much tales. It's just kind of, you know, it's a different thing. So really great, Pam. She has such great descriptions, and I thought the composition was beautiful. So thank you, Pam, very much. Let's go with Gray.
Well, he did a beautiful job reading that, Weaver. But, you know, Pam's poem is engaging throughout. You know, you can feel the storyline as she reads through it. He entertains villagers of each and every age. He fills minds with stories, turning yet another page. You know, that's the art of storytelling, is being able to carry it through till the end, which she did beautifully. He is the fable maker. He speaks imaginations, passing out a gift of love to people of all nations. Now, just a beautiful, powerful, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And Weaver, you did a great job reading it. What'd you think?
Oh, yes. It was a joy to read. I do love something like this. That's again, you see, we have this preciseness, this neatness, but so much feeling and emotion goes into it as well. So it's easy to read because it's so beautifully written, but then you get the feeling of just how much she cares. I think she's got a lovely soul. So this is our fable maker, and I think she did a beautiful job of, you know, saying what that is to people. That you can, it's nothing nicer than to hear a story from an actual person speaking to you, engaging you, smiling at you, and telling you a story. I think that's absolutely amazing. That kind of, I just realized actually that this time last year was the first time I ever sent a piece of poetry into a show. and it was called Gifts.
Oh, wow.
It was about Christmas. Yeah, just I just suddenly remembered it. Pardon?
Happy anniversary.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it was great. It was called Gifts, and it was about now is the season to be jolly as you buy this year's gifts with next year's lolly. But like we were talking about, too much money spent. Although the idea may be daft, thousands now have an overdraft. And it's not changed, has it? It's just exactly the same. People spend too much money. And this is basically telling us that you can give people something far more interesting and far more intelligent than a nice piece of a nice dress or a lovely bottle of perfume. So, yes, I think you did a beautiful job. Thank you so much, Pam. It was great.
Absolutely. All right, so, Bobby, you have a couple of tasks here because we have, believe it or not, three carryovers, which is pretty low for us. We actually did pretty good with that.
So
your job is to comment on Pam's poem and then talk about that. I didn't actually see you post the next contest, so I don't know what you're doing. So if you have any ideas, if you want to comment
and
then talk about it.
Well,
working on it.
Pam's piece reminded me of if you ever seen the film Out of Africa. It's based on it's fact based. It's by Karen Blixen, who was a Danish baroness, plantation owner in Africa. And one of the things you see Meryl Streep do as the character Karen Blixen is she does storytelling. She has two friends over one evening for dinner, and one asks, "Can you tell stories?" And she says, "Of course." She used to tell stories to her, I guess, her sisters or her nieces or something. But he gives her a subject and two lines, and she builds a story and weaves a story out of just these two kernels, these two seeds of information, and spends the entire evening storytelling, and it's all created from her mind, and I think the closest we come to that now is with parents. We sit and read books to our children at bedtime. Or we read poetry to our children at bedtime. But my father used to, at bedtime, actually tell me stories about when he was in the Marine Corps or when he was a boy. My grandmother would tell me stories of when she was a girl in Poland and what she went through when she came over across the Atlantic in a steamer, in steerage. And through Ellis Island, and those weren't made up. Those were actually real life experiences. But still, it's story to someone who hasn't experienced it, and you can do that. And I find myself doing that now with young people. Is they'll ask me things, and I remember things that happened to me in the Marine Corps that just didn't seem extraordinary at the time, but when you tell people things that happened to you that they have no chance of ever experiencing, to them it becomes a magic carpet. You're taking them places that they've never been and showing them things that they'll never see otherwise because you tell them about them. So the storytelling is still alive, but it doesn't flourish as much as it used to because we have wonderful storytellers and directors like Peter Jackson or Steven Spielberg or Ron Howard or George Lucas, who are able to tell us these wonderful stories on the screen. They don't tell us verbally. They tell us on the screen. So, there's still storytelling. It has just changed. It's changed with time. And with 1 minute left, I will say that I was working on the contest today. It is an artist that you all have already seen once. However, you got a limited taste of her work. It is Anne Bachelier. She was the artist that we featured for the Halloween contest. That was the Phantom of the Opera contest. Well, she's got a whole
body of work out there that you haven't been exposed to. And I was harvesting a whole, I'm going to use a technical term of a unit of measure called a shitload. I'm reharvesting a shitload of her work today and putting together a contest. So we're going to see Anne Bachelier again, who's a French artist, some of her beautiful fantasy paintings and watercolors. And I hope you enjoy looking at her work as much as I've enjoyed collecting it and assembling it for us. And I should have that posted probably in the next day or so. And since it is now after midnight, I want to officially be the first person to wish you all Merry Christmas!
Thank you.
Oh, yes, Merry Christmas. Thank you. You are the first one. 1201, look at that. Perfect.
So thank you all for joining us. Thank you, Gray, for your assistance early on. Weaver, thank you so much for coming and joining us. It made our Christmas Eve special.
Thank you, my dear. That's so nice.
You too. Yes. So
thank
Dan,
you, Bobby, for putting up with my craziness and running the show when I was.
You know, I give good-looking men so much latitude. So you know,
I agree. and you gave me some too. So I appreciate it. Thanks for wishing happy Christmas. That means it's going to be
happy
a great day.
Good night.
Thank you.
All right, take care, everybody.
Good night.
Thanks, Greg.
I'm 5 hours in, so I've had 5 hours of Christmas.
Oh, that's right. That's right. You're already into it. Have a great night. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.